Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Sunday, 61% of Greek voters rejected even more austerity for a new bailout deal. It was an historic no vote at a time when banks are closing and the economy is on the verge of collapse. Because of those factors, Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras has done a U-turn and is now asking Parliament to approve essentially the same deal. Right now, he's got two choices: agree to a deal he does not want or leave the Eurozone as early as Monday. So on today's Media Roundtable, we are discussing media coverage of the crisis in Greece. Today we're joined by Yannis Baboulias. He's a journalist, writer, and founding member of Precarious Europe. His work has been featured in the London Review of Books, The New Statesman, Open Democracy, and The Guardian. And Yannis joins us from Greece. Hi, Yannis. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Eric Reguli, the European columnist for the Globe and Mail, where he writes about the economy and finance, ranging from the Eurozone crisis to bank bailouts. And Eric joins us from Rome. Hi, Eric. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Great to be back, Rose.
Great to have you. And Kevin Hall is chief economics correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. Kevin is president of the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Kevin. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me back. I'm ex-president.
Oh, you're ex-president, former president. All right, thank you for that, and thank you for joining us. So as we always do on Your Calls Media Roundtable, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So, Kevin Hall, let's start with you. What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, it was a very long piece in Rolling Stone by Matt Taibbi, he of the famous Goldman Sachs eight-headed squid or whatever the quote was. Looking at Eric Holder and his going back to a law firm, and the tone of the article is basically that he was the best double agent Wall Street ever could have asked for. It's kind of in your face journalism. It's not the not bound by the same kind of restrictions that we have as daily print journalists, and a lot of food for thought.
I read an article about this in Salon with the title, Why Eric Holder's New Job is an Insult to the American Public. So he's going back to this corporate law firm, Covington & Burling.
Yes.
And according to Salon's David Day, and he's been on our show, Covington & Burling is one of the law firms that really helped Wall Street kind of skate by, right? So they were able not to be prosecuted as a result of the lawyers who were working with them. Is that what Matt Taibbi's piece was about?
Well, that's certainly his view. Some would argue that the law, as unsavory as it all was, the law was either allowed it or basically was silent on some of this activity. But it is notable that countries like Iceland managed to jail their bank executives and we didn't.
And what do you think about this kind of writing as an economics reporter, Kevin?
Well, it's a different kind of writing. Obviously, the format is one in which you can take an opinion. I mean, I think all of us have our own opinions. We try, as the daily print, you try not to let that make its way into your story. It may make its way into how you approach a story, but I think he's free to be a little more direct and lay out his argument as to why he thinks, you know, this is the case, and he makes a pretty good argument.
And he's going back to another $1 million salary. He made $2.5 million in his last year at this law firm.
Yes, yes, and he claimed he wasn't ready for the ivory tower. He still wanted to be a player, and that salary suggests he still is a player.
All right, well, kudos to Matt Taibbi and Rolling Stone for writing about Eric Holder and his new job, or job he returned to at this law firm, and we'll put a link at yourcallradio.org. That's Kevin Hall, chief economics correspondent with McClatchy Newspapers. And what about you, Eric Reguli? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, the piece, Rose, that I liked was, I wouldn't call it a piece of journalism, but it was a good little rant. It was written by Clive Crook. He is a columnist for Bloomberg, so a competitor of mine, but kudos to him. He wrote a scathing comment piece just ahead of the July 5th Greek referendum. The title is Europe Wants to Punish Greece with Exits. And what he concludes is that if Greece leaves, it won't be because the Greek people want to leave. It's because Europe, which means Germany, has turned the European Central Bank, which is supposed to be apolitical, into a political beast. And it's the ECB, the European Central Bank, that's been applying pressure on Greece by cutting off, by not increasing the emergency loans to the Greek banks. And the Greek banks have been shut for 10 days. And he says that, in effect, Europe is allowing the ECB to, quote, inflict punishment on Greece, and that punishment may be the exit from the Eurozone. So I thought it was a very powerful piece. It won't be popular in Germany, but it really hit home, and I, for the most part, I would agree with them.
And, Eric, we can talk about this more during the show, but do you think that there's been good coverage of the European Central Bank, just kind of an overview of what it actually does and what it is?
In the North American press, no. It's not like the Fed in the United States. It's got a different mandate. That mandate is price stability, whereas the Fed is concerned with price stability and also economic growth and jobs. So, and it's also strange in the sense that it's run by 19 Eurozone countries. So it's got to please a lot of people, and it doesn't always do it well. Now, in the last few years, it's done a pretty credible job in taking the edge off the crisis. I wouldn't agree, though, that it's done a great job in on the Greek file, though.
All right, and we'll talk about that later in the show, because a lot of pieces mention the European Central Bank but don't really give you any explanation about what kind of entity it actually is. So kudos to Clive. Was it Crook?
Crook, C-R-O-O-K.
Okay, yeah. Clive Crook
of Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, thank you. And that is Eric Reguli, European columnist with the Globe and Mail. And what about you, Yiannis? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, first of all, I need to agree with Eric that was a brilliant piece that highlights one of the sorts of the crises that has not been covered really well. But apart from that, I didn't find anything this week because I've been absorbed by the news, but the week before there was an amazing piece in The New Yorker by Joanna Kakissis covering the migrant crisis in Lesbos, in the island of Lesbos, in between the borders of Greece and Turkey, where people from fleeing Syria arrive in their thousands trying to escape a war zone, only to find horrible treatment and some very, very, very shameful circumstances waiting for them there, where there is no plan, no infrastructure, no plan to help them out of the situation. And Joanna has managed to capture an amazing image of everyday life there and the huge effort that the locals have been trying to alleviate this suffering.
Because so much coverage in Greece is focused on the economic crisis, are you seeing much coverage of what's happening with people who are finding themselves in Kos, at 2.5 nautical? It's 2.5 nautical miles from the southeastern coast of Turkey. I mean, is that getting much attention in Greece, in the media?
There has been some coverage lately. There has been some coverage, like, in the past month. But that has been the situation for the past 2 years. So the focus on the financial crisis has hurt the coverage of other issues that the borders of Europe are essentially facing.
And sorry about that. So we'll link to this article also, a New Yorker article by Joanna Kakissis, The Migrant Crisis on Greece's Islands, at yourcallradio.org. And that's Yiannis Baboulias. He's a journalist, writer, and founding member of Precarious Europe, and he's joining us from Greece. You can find links at yourcallradio.org. So, Yiannis, things are moving as we're talking. I just heard a BBC headline about what's happening in the parliament. So the Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras has essentially done a U-turn and is now asking parliament to approve the same deal that 61% of Greek voters just rejected. What is the latest?
Well, I wouldn't call it a U-turn. This has been this has been brewing for some time, and I wouldn't say it's the responsibility of the Greek prime minister. What has happened here is that there was a miscalculation about what this referendum would actually mean. Tsipras was hoping that a strong result in the referendum would mean that it would strengthen his hand in the negotiations. What happened, though, was that the country's creditors turned around and hardened their stance and said, Alexis, take it or leave it, this is it, there's nothing more you can get. It's this or you leave the euro. Now, there was contradicting messages from the Greek society, contradictory messages, sorry. From the one side, you had the... you had the referendum, which clearly rejected the deal, but from the other hand, the polling showed that 80% of people wanted to remain in the euro. Now, there is no way to basically compromise those two positions without appearing like you are either taking Greece out of the euro intentionally or that you're capitulating to the creditors. Mm. Now, what Tsipras is trying to do here is essentially take advantage of the fact that he has a strong mandate either way. Syriza is the dominant political force to get the best possible deal. Unfortunately, the best possible deal is still atrocious. So that's what we're witnessing right now.
And Yannis, where are you in Greece?
Right now I'm in Western Greece. I just left Athens.
And what is the mood like? What are people talking about?
It's mixed. It's mixed. It's a mix of relief, but also a lot of bewilderment at what we're facing, what we're seeing coming from Europe. This is a very it's a very peculiar time for most people because they wanted a better deal. They wanted an end to austerity, but instead, what we got was a continuation of the situation, and they know that the that leaving the euro would be a very risky move that would possibly send the economy into a tailspin for quite some time, and people are not exactly ready for that. I'm not even sure there's a plan for that. So there's a lot of relief as well that at least the situation might stabilize. Although I do have to point out that because Greece is now putting forward a proposal that's along the lines of what was offered by Jean-Claude Juncker a week ago, it doesn't mean that it will be accepted by the country's creditors. It doesn't mean that Germany will give the green light for this. There's still room for the deal to be rejected, for the proposal to be rejected, at which point we are looking again at a Greek exit from the eurozone. Mm. So nothing's finished.
And so, Eric, now all eyes are now on this deal. But talk a little bit about how last week's rejection has been covered and how historic this was. Again, 61% of Greek voters rejected even more austerity for a new bailout deal.
Well, from the media point of view, Rose, I mean, I think there was a lot of skepticism about whether this referendum would work. I mean, it was a very the question was not clear to begin with. It wasn't simple like the Scottish referendum was in September, which asked Scotland whether it wanted to be in or out of the UK. This was not a simple in or out question. It was something along the lines, it was even difficult to translate into English. Do you accept or reject the creditor's last proposal? That last proposal had been taken off the table by then. So it was ridiculous in that sense. And it was doubly ridiculous in the sense that if Alexis Tsipras, the Prime Minister of Greece, thought a no vote was going to strengthen his hand, he was dead wrong. I mean, it just really annoyed the creditors in Frankfurt and Brussels and Berlin, and they hardened up and they've given Greece an ultimatum, and that ultimatum is being expressed through the banks. You know, we've in effect on the verge of killing your banks. Once the banks go, it's lights out. I mean, it's lights out in a matter of minutes. you know, if these banks don't reopen. So I think that the foreign press anyway was quite skeptical, rightly so, about how effective this referendum would be.
And Eric, you were in Greece during this referendum. What did people tell you? What did they want from their no vote?
They wanted, I was there until 2 days ago. I was there almost 2 weeks. And what the Greeks wanted was a no vote that would strengthen the prime minister's hand. It didn't. Now, the prime minister campaigned for a no vote. At the same time, I think he was surprised he got such a strong no vote. But it backfired in that sense. So referendum was a failure. And in a sense, it didn't improve anything. And we have that now. We looked at, you know, Yanis was talking about it. I mean, this austerity in this new proposal, this take it or leave it proposal, the austerity is still full of intensified.
Yeah, if I can jump in here.
Sure, Kevin.
We're losing our signal. One of the things that also added to the strangeness of it was that he was elected to begin with on the grounds that he was going to reject austerity and demand, you know, better terms.
Right.
So putting it to the people was kind of redundant since he was elected for this purpose anyway, which seemed a strange move on his part. And then you put on top of that, he's known as a student of game theory. And then you think about who's holding the cards. There was a certain amount of theater in all this about trying to leverage for position, but it's now at the point that it's more serious. And I think the sad commentary on all of it is what's now on the table is worse than what was on the table before in terms of austerity, and the economy's in worse shape, and it's going to take more to get it back in shape. So it's a self-inflicted wound that really has exacerbated the situation.
In some of the coverage, it basically says it's essentially the same deal. So what about it is actually worse, Kevin?
Well, it covers a longer period, and the economy has shrunk so much in the last 12 days that it's you're starting from a worse point that's worse off. You've got your banking system closed for 10 days. They've never really been terribly clear as to if, you know, they've said all along they want to stay in the euro, but if they have to leave, do they adopt the drachma? Do they just keep doing like Albania and use the euro even though they're not part of the central bank? So there's so much uncertainty out there and they've just changed finance ministers again. So if you're a Greek citizen, it's got to be terribly perplexing.
Right. Yanis, what are you hearing from people on the streets at a time when Greece has a 30% unemployment rate, 50% for people under 25, and more than 35% of Greeks are living below the poverty line?
Well, what are you hearing in the streets in these kind of conditions? People are desperate for an end to austerity. People are desperate to get the economy going again, to get on with their lives. People have put a lot of their dreams in waiting. So what would you expect to hear? It's not a pleasant situation. And I think one of the points of the referendum, which wouldn't necessarily translate outside Greece, is and doesn't immediately address the financial issues, is that Syriza was facing essentially a war on the domestic front from the opposition and from the mainstream media, from what we call the Greek oligarchs. Now, those people are the same ones that brought Greece to this point. Of course, this is not a situation which Syriza could have created in 6 months. This is something that was pre-existing. So those people were campaigning against the government. One of the things that this referendum did was to say a resounding no to the forces that wanted to essentially recapture power, who were thinking that they could bring down Syriza and continue with things as they were before. So this is the thing that is very strong in the minds of Greek people right now, that they want an end to corruption, an end to clientelism, an end to business as usual under the previous governments. So what they're hoping to get at least out of this very bad situation is a government that can deliver on those fronts, something which doesn't translate abroad, something which doesn't translate internationally, but it is very, very, very much a concern in the minds of common people on the ground, an end to corruption and to the everyday problems mm-hmm. that the previous regime of things had essentially imposed and didn't look like it was going away. Because the problem with the previous two deals, the bailout deals that Greece had achieved, is that they did nothing to address those underlying problems. Mm. And people want that, at least that, to change.
Yeah. Kevin, go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and say one of the issues in Greece is that it really reflects a bigger structural issue within the European Union. I think everybody understands that Germany and Greece, although they both use the euro, have two very disparate economies. And while you've got the ECB that we talked about earlier, the central bank making monetary policy decisions, they've just, as part of this ongoing debt crisis that includes Greece but is larger than Greece, they've also been given new mandates to have common financial policies or public finance, for lack of a better word. So they're going to have, you know, certain percent of budget deficits and things of that sort. So they're starting to harmonize. So that's all a good thing, but it doesn't erase the fact that, you know, Greece and Germany are very, very different economies. Germany benefits from the European Union in that it exports throughout that European Union and then the rest of the world. So it gets a built-in benefit from having Greece in the Union, but it isn't willing at this point to incur the downside to it. And there was everybody was happy when things were going swimmingly, and there was a lot of benefit in Germany, as we talked about at the top of the hour, that the Germans themselves seem not to own up to.
What about Yanis's point, Kevin, about the previous government? We haven't seen, or have you seen, much analysis of how the previous government was responsible for so much corruption and cronyism?
Well, I think it's been in most of the financial press. It's certainly been well reported, and it's the kind of thing, again, that the European powers all were aware of, and it certainly was not limited to Greece either. And, you know, I think it's convenient now to lay it on the doorstep of those who got us here, but I think it was a shared failure.
And, Eric, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree that the sins of the previous governments are well known. It was a looting job for not just years, but for decades. I mean, some of the stories are just legendary, like the Greek National Railway. Its payroll was 400% greater than its actual ticket sales. I mean, this went on for years and years and years. Yes, I mean, the new government is you know, one of the leverage points passed is, you know, claiming it can clean this up. I believe it can do it quickly, but it's probably got a pretty good chance. But, you know, I think it's just utterly grim. I mean, Greece may not exit the Eurozone next week, but I think with this new layer of austerity, it's going to be gone within a year or two. It just can't compete. The economy is just going to keep getting crushed, and it's going to have to go back to the drachma. This is the exposing the essential flaw of monetary union on this continent.
And hold that thought, Eric. You know, that is Eric Regalia. Sorry about the line. We'll try to get that fixed. Today we are talking about media coverage of the crisis in Greece, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK, a toll-free call, 866-798-8255, or you can send your question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Reveal. Following that at noon today, the Tavis Smiley Show, and then this afternoon at 1, Latino USA.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we will kick off another week-long series on water and the water crisis. This time, we're going to focus on solutions to California's water crisis. We will be discussing the most effective ways to reduce demand for water. Where are the most water-efficient cities in the world? We'll look at Australia as one example. Australia has implemented strict water-saving measures after suffering from a drought for more than a decade. So what can we learn from Australia and other drought stricken areas around the globe? That is Monday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it is our media roundtable. We are discussing coverage of the crisis in Greece. On Sunday, 61% of Greek voters rejected even more austerity for a new bailout deal. It was an historic no vote at a time when banks are closing and the economy is on the verge of collapse. But now Prime Minister Alex Tsipras is asking Parliament to approve essentially the same deal, or as Kevin Hall said, in some ways it's even worse. So what questions do you have about what's happening in Greece? What do you make of the media coverage of this crisis? Do you feel like there's enough historical context there that takes a look at past governments? What about the deeper issue? Some argue there's a deeper issue here that the EU does not want a leftist government in charge of Greece. What strikes you about the coverage that you've seen? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Eric Regulli, European columnist for the Globe and Mail, where he writes about the economy and finance. Kevin Hall is chief economics correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. And Yanis Baboulias is a journalist and writer. His work has been featured in the London Review of Books and The Guardian. And Yanis, what are your thoughts on that? In some articles, people argue that there's a much deeper issue here, that the EU does not want a leftist government that goes against the neoliberal model that they embrace.
Well, there's definitely a suspicion that a lot of the resistance that Greece has been seeing from the creditors comes down to ideology. It would be a very sorry state of affairs if that was the case, because it would signal that this is not just an economical and political project, but an ideological one as well. And I'm not sure a lot of countries would appreciate having the government they can vote in dictated by ideologies in Brussels and Berlin. I think it would create the context for the complete disintegration of both the Eurozone and the European Union in the long term.
And what has been the reaction of Yanis Varoufakis announcing his departure just hours after the no side won a resounding victory? He was Greek's finance minister.
Well, the reaction, I'll just give you a snapshot from something that happened yesterday. He walked into the ancient theater of Herodotus Atticus underneath the Acropolis for a show. And before the show, people started clapping and shouting his name. I'm talking about a theater of 2,000-3,000 people. So you get the idea of how Greeks think of him right now. He's a very, very popular politician. And I think the fact that he followed his conviction that I'm not signing a deal that doesn't have 1, 2, 3 will make him even more popular. But Varoufakis is steadily behind the current government. He's not a rogue player in any of this. He just has very strong convictions about what sort of deal Greece should get.
And that's how he's covered in many of the Western reports. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how the Western media covers someone like Yanis Varoufakis, even going as far as blaming him for what has happened.
Well, the media like nothing more than a scapegoat that they can pin failures of entire structures on. But I think the fact that Varoufakis does not exactly fit in with the furniture in Brussels is not the problem. They liked to pin it on that, but the problem is that he went in and instead of talking as if everything was all right. So when you have finance ministers of other countries pretending that the Greek debt is viable somehow, miraculously, and him pointing out that, no, we need to reach a deal that makes it viable. And he has pointed out, he actually highlighted this difference alongside Christine Lagarde of the IMF in some of the meetings before he resigned. The people didn't like this. A lot of finance ministers said they felt that Varoufakis was lecturing them. And this sort of seeped through to the international media. A lot of the coverage, he went very quickly from hero to villain, whereas everyone was raving about him in the early months of like January and February. He then just turned into this wild card that everyone hated. But I don't think it's because Varoufakis had... Varoufakis is a very centrist person. He's deeply in love with the idea of the euro, of the European Union. Not so much the euro, but the European Union, and he wants to see the project succeeding. So labeling him as someone who didn't want the negotiation to go through, or that couldn't talk sense, or that wasn't responsible enough, I think that was a lot of personal attacks trying to undermine the negotiations rather than an honest approach. And unfortunately, that definitely made it in the international media, which by the end of it, by late May and June, were basically very, very, very happy to take a shot at Varoufakis and his clothes and his attitude, and the fact that, unlike other finance ministers, he seemed confident and, believing his ideas. I think they wanted someone who was much more, much less willing to contradict their delusions in many ways. And I think that became really evident, like in this deal that proposal that I think Dijsselbloem was essentially the president of the Eurogroup was suggesting that Greece signs a deal now that says that would make the debt viable, and then in November we would sign a new one that recognized it as unviable. Of course, Varoufakis didn't accept that. And, it made sense that the climate very quickly turned against him.
And Eric Regulli, you have written about now the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis. What would you add to that? Is Eric's line still iffy? All right.
Hi, can you hear me, Rose?
Yeah, you're better now. Go ahead.
Rose?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I'm fading in and out here. Bad connection in Italy. I liked him. I thought he was absolutely right that Greece's debt is unsustainable. He thinks that Greece needs what they call a debt haircut. Unfortunately, he was very abrasive. He was not a good negotiator. Actually, called just ahead of the July 5th referendum, he called the creditors, quote, terrorists, and that did not sit well. So I think that one of the reasons the negotiations broke down and completely collapsed was because of abrasive style. But on the other hand, there's no doubt he was bang on his message that piling more austerity, piling more debt on Greece is not the cure. It's just going to make it worse.
Mm.
Yeah, Rose,
Kevin?
Two things. I wanted to push back on something you said earlier about that somehow this is punishing Tsipras for being to the left. Everybody said the same thing with Hollande, and Hollande has turned out to work rather well with Merkel, and so I'm not sure I buy that argument. But I think what we have is a kind of a stunning lack of leadership. I think back, I've had the good fortune or bad fortune, however you look at it, to have been in Argentina in 2001 for its crisis, and in Mexico in 94. And there are parallels, one of which Bill Clinton did something that was very unpopular in the United States. He gave what seemed to be a huge loan at the time, $30 billion, 32 I think it was, to Mexico to keep their economy afloat, and guaranteed repayment, all the oil money from Mexico flowed through the New York Federal Reserve Bank. That was a very creative way to address Mexico's economic problem, to give them a line of credit, get them back on their feet, recognizing that a neighbor on its knees is probably going to be a bigger problem for us than a neighbor not on its knees. And the Europeans have, you know, have not been terribly creative in how you could take. There are plenty of ways. We had the debt crisis in the 1980s with Brady bonds. There are lots of ways you could deal with the Greek debt that don't even need a haircut. Haircut would certainly be the preference, but there's been a pretty stunning lack of creativity as well.
Joseph Stiglitz, the economist, wrote a piece in Time magazine called The U.S. Must Save Greece. I haven't read the whole thing, but I know that he's calling for some kind of bailout, right? What are your thoughts on that?
I haven't read the piece, but I do think it's the Europeans have to figure this out because it's their bailiwick, although Greece is a member of NATO, so I guess you could make an argument that from the NATO perspective we need Greece. But I think the bigger problem, and I think your Greek guest has highlighted it, is that you have constituencies. You know, the Spanish press, the Italian press have been tough because they've been undergoing austerity themselves, so they're not very sympathetic to the Greeks because they took tough measures that they feel the Greeks haven't taken. And the politicians who make up the governing bodies of the EU respond to those constituencies, and then the ECB, for all the talk of not being political, still has to reflect those realities and respond to those realities. So it's a really, I think that's something that's very different than the United States, which, by the way, was a currency union until about 1923.
And Yiannis, what are your thoughts on this? The economist Joseph Stiglitz says it's time for the U.S. to be generous with our friends in Greece in their time of need.
There's a problem with that it would be seen as a direct intervention into the inside workings of the Eurozone, and that would not please Germany one bit. I think there is scope for such an intervention because, yes, as was mentioned, Greece is a member of NATO. The last thing you need right now is a destabilized Greece sitting at the borders of Europe with so many threats nearby. And you have this, you have the borders where millions of people are right now trying to cross into Europe, and states around it are in disarray. So, yeah, there is the scope, but I don't think it would go down well politically. And Obama has tried to intervene and help Greece on a political level. And right now, I think Germany has been very, very, very hostile towards such interventions. I'm not sure that they've helped at all. So a financial intervention would probably make it even worse.
Well
in also, if I can jump
Eric.
In for just one sec, the Americans are involved, of course, through the International Monetary Fund. Now, I know that's a global institution, but it's based in Washington, and it's seen as an American institution. So they are very much involved, and they're very much directly involved through the IMF. But, yes, for the Americans to go one step further and do a direct bailout, that would not go over well in Europe at all.
And that is Eric Reguli, European columnist with The Globe and Mail. Yiannis Baboulias is a journalist. His work has been featured in the London Review of Books, Al Jazeera English, and The Guardian. And Kevin Hall is chief economics correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. Today we're talking about media coverage of the economic crisis in Greece. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Bob in San Francisco. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I haven't seen much media coverage to discuss what Greece has already done, at least since 2010, to get their budget under control. That Paul Krugman wrote earlier this week that the amount that they've actually cut from the budget would have, if their economy had not collapsed as a result, would have completely eliminated their deficit. But as one of your guests just said, you know, the Italians and the Spanish are complaining about, you know, what Greece hasn't done, and the Germans, so forth. What they have done is significant, and it's been a proof of Keynesianism that it caused their economy to collapse. So I don't see anything about, you know, what it is that Greece has already done to correct their budgetary problems, or try to do anyway.
Eric, do you want to take that one first? Were you able to hear?
Yeah, the Greece has, in fact, done an enormous fiscal adjustment. They are, or were until a few months ago, running a primary surplus, which means that That's a budget surplus if you strip out the debt payment. So their adjustment was actually huge. Where the Greeks have not done well is actually making the economy more competitive, such as, you know, changing the labor standards to make it more competitive, or reducing drastically the number of civil servants. They haven't really shaken up that part of their economy, but as far as taking costs out, they've done a credible job, probably too good of a job, because it's really dampened economic performance.
Yeah, if we can jump in there and just say that the costs have been fiscal costs, government costs to some degree, but they haven't done things to stimulate. I think Krugman argues today, I believe, that to be more creative in finding a way that you can reduce debt but also loosen money so that people have money to spend. I don't know the degree. Your Greek guests might be able to tell us how much of a consumption-driven economy Greece is. I know they're not a major exporter, so therein lies part of the problem. What do you offer the global market? And you can't devalue your currency like you could if you had the drachma.
Yiannis, what about that?
Well, I have to disagree with the point on the public sector. Actually, Greece has essentially laid off something more than 200,000 public sector employees in these past 5 years, which is essentially one-fourth of the workforce. At this stage, without reforming the entire state mechanism, which is impossible under austerity, you wouldn't be able to really go in deeper and get more people out of the public sector. However, I will agree that there hasn't been a lot of reform on how to make the economy more competitive. A reason for that is that, for instance, if you try to reform the labor market in a distressed economy, as the Greek economy is right now, you meet a lot of resistance from the people. The economy needs to start growing before we start talking more labor reform. I think it's understandable that if you're seeing people left and right losing their jobs, taking pay cuts, the idea that, for instance, you should do away with collective bargaining would probably sound like more layoffs. It wouldn't sound like it would produce any benefit for the economy in the short term. There's the problem with exports. Greece does have a good exporting base, which is essentially thwarted by the very expensive euro, which works for Germany, France, even Spain, but not for a small country like Greece. It does benefit, though, from the tourism industry, which is at the moment 6.5 of our GDP. So it's a massive industry for Greece. And in that, how Europeans deal with it is that they're now trying to impose more taxation on the tourism industry. I don't see how that's productive, to be honest.
Yeah.
But there are certainly more things that can and should be done, but won't until the economy starts growing again.
Kevin, was that you? Did you want to jump in?
No.
Okay.
I think he hit the nail on the head. One thing to distinguish, as your listeners are trying to distinguish our economic crisis from the one that Europe has been going through, and now Greece more specifically, is that we got in trouble because of over-leveraged banks that took bad bets on complex financial instruments. In the case of the European Union, their problem is too much government debt that was used as collateral by banks, so banks are holding their own debt, sovereign debt, government bonds, and Greece even more so. So it's a bit of a unique crisis compared to ours. It's more like a traditional Latin American crisis.
And Eric, anything to add there?
Well, I'd disagree whether Europe was really a debt crisis, because two of the countries that got into trouble, Ireland and Spain, did not have a lot of debt before they went into the crisis. Greece, on the other hand, definitely has too much debt, and it has to come down some way. Now, the debt may not actually be outright cut, but what they have to do is do fiddling with it, like extending the maturities and that. But my bottom line is that they accept this package, this austerity package, which they will. And I think just Greece is doomed. It's either a quick death by rejecting the package, or it's a slow motion suicide by through austerity over the next few years.
So what does that mean when you say Greece is doomed?
It's doomed. It's got it's in the sense that, you know, either it's going to get kicked out of the Eurozone next week and its economy and banks will collapse. The banks are on the verge of collapse right now. Or it's going to get ground down by more tax increases and spending cuts. And that's what austerity is. I mean, you know, they're increasing the value-added tax. The corporate tax is going up. The pensions are coming down. I mean, there's only so much this economy can take. And it's, you know, the fundamental flaw of these, this will be now the third bailout, is that these bailouts don't take the people into account. They don't take growth into account. They're investing. There's no investment into infrastructure and education. You know, programs that would make the economy more competitive. It's just it's cut. It doesn't work.
I'd be interested in knowing from your our Greek guest whether or not he thinks if they leave, whether they'll stick with the euro or whether they'll readopt the drachma or some new currency.
Yiannis?
I would think if we leave the Eurozone, we would need to introduce our own currency, not stick with the euro. I mean, it already looks like this is sort of a hard pegging system rather than a monetary union, since we don't have a lender of last resort in the ECB. And I think it would be suicidal to keep using the euro. It would be like certain countries of the third world that use the dollar without actually being part of the US. Whereas with a Greek currency, either devalued, I wouldn't let it float because it would be disastrous for the first few months. But a pegged currency at some exchange rate with the euro, which could boost exports and could boost tourism, I think it could get the economy going much faster than people think. But it would bring on a lot of turmoil, and the first year would probably be terrible to watch. so yeah, that's my idea would be to go for a national currency. And I would have to agree that the idea that this will solve the Greek problem is laughable. Like, we are being put on the road for a major disaster down the line. It's not changing the predicament of the country. It's either sudden death or death by a thousand cuts. Like, it doesn't really put Greece back on the path of growth. I'm hoping there will be moves that will maybe fix this. One of those is the huge investment drive that the European Central Bank is trying to put in place now, from which Greece will get a chunk from. But apart from that, and if that is put under conditions of more austerity and more cuts, I too see this ending in disaster.
Wow. Yiannis, how are people preparing for this? You wrote a piece for Al Jazeera English called Bread But No Roses, Free Essentials Provide Relief to Cash-Starved Greeks. You just, you know, explored various things happening, like free public transportation, bread shops giving out free food, for example. I mean, how are people preparing for what's to come?
I didn't actually write that piece.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It was Dodi Santar. I was actually going to ask you about this piece. Sorry about that. Well, so how are people preparing then? If you say that it's going to be really, really bad and Eric Regeli says it's doomed, what are you hearing from people?
I'm not sure that anyone can actually prepare for this. There's some preparation on a business-to-business level, whereas because the banks are closed right now and because liquidity is very, very limited, businesses have a lot of businesses have come to an understanding, so everything's just going on as usual. But I'm not sure that's not going to be disrupted if Greece leaves the euro, and I'm not sure much can be done to sort of help with this. It might sound weird, but the only thing that could possibly make this transition smoother is the fact that a lot of Greeks have taken their money out of the banks. So if it does indeed collapse, and if there is a change in currency, those euros stashed away in mattresses and cooking pots might come in handy and might help in the first few months of the transition. It sounds ironic, though.
Kevin?
One of the things that's been floated in economic circles here, I don't know the degree to which it's made it across the Atlantic, but one of the ideas has been to have a Greek euro. So you don't really leave the euro, you just have a Greek produced euro that's indexed or pegged, as Yiannis had mentioned, for a fixed period of time through which they can have the equivalent of a devaluation, eventually work down their debt, and rejoin the euro. So it's kind of a, it's not a complete exit, but it's a bit of a face-saving exit for everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know the degree to which this is regaining strength, but 6 months ago or so, there was a lot of talk about this Greek euro, and I don't know if that's going anywhere.
The parallel currency, yes, it has been making the rounds. I'm sorry to jump in, but
no,
yes, the idea of a parallel currency has been floated, and it could work for a certain amount of time. I think Greece would still have to go to a back to its own currency. And maybe if the Eurozone survives, which I'm not actually very optimistic it will in general, regardless of what happens with Greece, if it survives, we can talk about rejoining in maybe 10 years. But having a parallel currency for 10 years is a very complex and dangerous balance, which is not worth the trouble. If we move to a parallel currency, which then becomes a national currency, that I think would be the most optimistic scenario.
Yiannis Baboulias is a journalist joining us from Greece. He was just in Athens. Eric Regulli is European columnist for the Globe and Mail. He just left Greece 2 days ago. And Kevin Hall is chief economics correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers. Thank you all for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Where are the most water-efficient cities in the world? On the next Your Call, we'll kick off a week-long series on solutions to California's water crisis by discussing the most effective ways to reduce demand for water. Australia implemented strict water-saving measures after suffering from a drought for more than a decade. So what can we learn from Australia and other drought-stricken areas? What would California need to do to make itself a model for water conservation? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.
Coming up next here on Local Public Radio, following that at 12 noon, the Tavis Smiley Show. At 1, it's Latino USA. And then at 2, News Hour from the BBC. The KALW Summer Program Guide is now available online at KALW.org. If you're a member supporter who receives a printed hard copy in the mail, you'll be getting that in the next couple of days. The Summer Program Guide features Rose Aguilar's interview about the California water crisis with Daniel Beard and Connor Everts. Also, station manager Matt Martin's comments on the approaching departure of Car Talk and the next steps for programs like Inflection Point and FSFSF. Find it online at KALW.org or your mailbox within the next week. 11 o'clock is the time, KALW San Francisco.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. I want you to think about the technology you carry with you every day. The things that now feel like you couldn't live without, like your smartphone, your tablet, your activity tracker. It's miraculous how they keep us connected. But there can be a heavy price for that tiny magic.
I saw hundreds and hundreds of hydrofluoric acid splashes on people. Fingers and toes, noses. It was just horrific.
Workers are being put at risk. And it's not just on factory floors, but in our office buildings on the night shift.
Every time I come to pass by this bank, I remember what happened. That's why I agreed to let you tape me, so I could help remind women that they shouldn't work alone.
on this episode of Reveal, Hidden Hazards in the Working World. But first, this news.